Podcasting from the beautiful Mile High City, you're listening to the Do It Again podcast, the official podcast of Scientific Wrestling, the undisputed leader in no-holds-barred, catch-as-catch-can wrestling. Here's your host, Jake Shannon.
ScientificWrestling.com presents Lion's Share Legends Volume 2. Jake Shannon interviews Gene LaBelle.
Hello.
Yes, is Mr. LaBelle available?
Who's this?
This is Jake Shannon calling. I'm the friend of Bob's, Bob Calhoun.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I have your Grappling World, the Encyclopedia of Finishing Holds. I mean, I'll be damned. I can't find one of the ones in the old-timers books that you haven't covered. In, you know what I mean? In like 5 or 10 old-timers books, you've got everything in that encyclopedia.
Yeah, a lot of them, they use different names. You know, the old-timers, when I first started at 7, which was 104 years ago, we used to call foot and leg control. Now, 25 years ago, the Brazilians invented it, and they call it the guard. And so I go to the Brazilians, and they says, we invented the guard, and I said, you're full of shit. First of all, what it's supposed to be is foot and leg control. You control the guy with the feet. You control him, you know, to roll him over, do whatever you want to do. And you can move him away, kick him away or whatever. And they say it's the guard, just so the guy's demonstrating it to me. And he says, well, you got to scissor him. And I says, if a guy can do a scissors on me, he's in trouble. I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to hook a leg.
Yeah.
His legs aren't going to jump away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's sticking it right there.
In a triangle or any of the practical moves or slip over for an armbar, you got to have your legs unhooked. So, you know, it doesn't take much for me to wet my pants, you know. I mean, you can roll a guy over in a simple half Boston or full Boston crab if he, you know, give him a rack on the gut or the groin area and over he goes. It depends your attitude, of course.
I've seen the tapes that you did with Mondo Guerrero too.
Mm-hmm.
Those are great.
Wrestler. He's a good wrestler, yeah.
Now, did you work with him with the hooks as well?
I did a lot of hooks, but you know that tape was done about 15 years ago. So, you know, a lot of the moves, I think we only had one heel hook in it, and not as many arm bars or neck locks that I would like to do. I mean, you take the encyclopedia, and I've got about 70 holes that we were going to put in that we didn't get in, you know. And you just can't put everything in. And I do things with a flair of comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you gotta, they either gotta love you or hate you, you know.
I love your facial expressions.
A face or a heel, you know.
Right, right.
And in that thing, I come off as a heel and sarcastic and everything, and build it up, and everybody wants to beat the hell out of me. And at the end, they all come up with wearing my T-shirt, you know.
Yeah, right. I stole this shirt from Gene LaBelle.
Yeah.
You know what? I met you last year at the Cauliflower Alley Club. And it kind of, when you wrote to me back in that letter, and you had mentioned how, you know, with you and Bob, how you'd gone through the whole thing in trying to retain your rights, and people, like, ripping your stuff off and things of that nature.
Yeah.
it reminded me because that, you know what, a year before, I think it was in the December of 2003, Black Belt Magazine, there was some guy who had ripped off your three-fingered grip.
The three-finger grip?
Yeah, in that Black Belt magazine, and you were like, I remember you telling me about that. You're like, yeah, that guy stole my grip.
Yeah, it's not mine. And you know how that, I invented that grip, and I'll tell you how. And you find it before 1936, and I'll buy you a new hat. I was working out at the LA Athletic Club with about six pro wrestlers. I mean, shooters, all shooters, and this guy, Ed Lewis, he just sort of retired from pro wrestling, and they're doing shooting holds, and he shows me how to grab four fingers around the blade side of your hand. Well, he says, do it on me, and my fingers weren't long enough, so my thumb went on the inside, and I said, between his fingers. And he says, yeah, that's interesting. And he went to tease me, and he did it to himself. And he says, you know, more of my fingers go around the side. So he said, stop the class. And, you know, the guys, a lot of them are old pros with big scarfers. Let's try this grip. Because you have the Greco-Roman grips and the freestyle grips and... let's try this jeans three-finger grip, you know, and you really squeeze your fingers together. When you do it, your trigger finger and your thumb, if you squeeze them real tight, like, you lock your thumb in. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, sure, I can understand that.
Well, do it to yourself and squeeze your thumb and your trigger finger and your... the long finger, and just squeeze it all together and lock that thumb in.
Yeah, it's like the knuckle of your thumb locks in.
That's it. And your hand doesn't slip out as easy. Do you understand?
Sure, sure.
So when I worked out there, my mother made me go there on Saturdays, every Saturday, just to get rid of me. And they said, okay, we're doing Gene's three-finger grip. Now, since then, people have copied that. They, in Black Belt Magazine and a couple of other magazines, they did a couple of biting holds and different biting holds. And there's a couple of variations of holds that I do. One of them is, an arm crank. And one of the master Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guys put it in the book and the cover, and he's a CFW published a book of a bunch of good grapplers, and this guy's good and everything, but he put the wrong foot over to hook the guy, like he puts his foot over his head and the guy can spin out of it. He puts it over his back and he can spin out the other way. So I told it to the publisher. I said, this guy's full of crap. I want to see him, you know. I told him to tease the guy on it. Of course, I'm doing this with tongue-in-cheek, not trying to be conceited. I just say, hey, you do it this way, and I says, that way is great. But if you do it your way, the guy can just spit out, arch and roll, or whatever, and he's behind your butt, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have copied different things I've done, and they do it slightly off, which is wrong. And I make sure if I copy something that Jake the Rake does, I not only give him screen credits, but if I don't have it right, I'll say, hey, Jake, show me how you rake his eyes again, you know?
Hey, I like that. Now, so let me ask you this. The I think it was it the 1954 Amateur Athletic Union Nationals that you won for judo, or was it 19?
Yep.
Did you win 54 and 55?
Yeah.
Now, so, and you had kind of been working out with these old-timers, too, so...
Oh, yeah. In fact, in 54, I had a, I won, but I had a tough time. All these guys gave me a the good guys gave me a real rough time. And I have it on tape. They did a little old 8mm type. And how I beat this one guy who was very, very, very good. He was a lot better than me, but, you know, I think he sort of ran out of gas. And I got him down in the side pin, the scarf hold, and I held on tight. And after about 10 seconds, he gives up. So they give me the match, and I says, well, because I says, boy, I really hold him tight. Of course, I don't realize until a few years later, working with the pros, don't forget when you pin his shoulders to the ground, lean that head back. And I was thinking, well, you crush the ribs. It isn't that, you're cranking the neck.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So not only was I cutting his wind, but he gave up because of a neck lock, which was illegal. So the referee didn't know it, the judge didn't know it, and I didn't know it. So, you know, you got four dumb people there. And it gave me a hell of an advantage. And the following year, I had a new training method, training with a tire, you know, motorcycle tire, and gloves on, and, you know, pulling it and throwing it backwards, the opposite way a discus would be thrown, just like you're not doing push-ups, it's just the opposite of push-ups, it's like rowing. And my techniques of getting in and throwing the guy were so much better. And some of these same guys that were really good, I threw fairly handily, you know?
Just in 1 year's time?
Yeah, of course. I'm working out 8 hours a day, every day, you know? Fanatic. But that doesn't... The harder you work, the luckier you get, you know? Carl, one day in the dressing room, showed me a downward arm crank with a wrist lock. Well, he showed me that move, and it's been a thing that I've hooked a lot of guys over the years. And I got one of my kids that entered a Get Tough contest. The first one he did, he went against a real tough guy. And he hooked the downward arm crank, key locked it, and threw him around in judo throws.
Oh, was that at the UFC?
Yeah.
It was like a double wrist lock.
Yep. So he came pretty good at it and threw the guys around and hooked them. I got it on tape, and it's always good if somebody does something, does it right, you know?
Yeah.
And not just get a lucky kick or a lucky something or other, and if you're going for it. So,
Now, did you ever think that grappling would ever get back to the level of popularity that it is today? I mean, because...
I boxed. I grew up in boxing gyms, you know. And I really believe in learning boxing. Learn to bob, weave, and stuff like that. And throw punches.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I stole this from Ed when he was a kid. When I was a kid, I was 7 years old. He says, you want to do Greco-Roman? And I thought, well, that's too foreign for me to learn. You want to roll? I says, well, that sounds like something to eat. Or you want to do freestyle? You want to fight? You know, I figured about boxing. Or do you want to grapple? And I says, well, what's grappling? He says, that's a combination of everything. I says, I want to learn that, you know? And see, the way he worked, you know, they just shot. There's no work in there. The way he worked out is he'd do anything. He'd slap the face and go into a wrist lock. He'd knee in the groin and go into half Boston crab. You know, stuff like that. That was all part of it. Or a lot of laying the elbows right on the pubic hair, and the guy folds over, gives you your leg, and you hook it. So that's sort of what I took to, because you meet a karate guy, and they're all doing the stand-up thing, and you get Mean Joe Green or Howie Long in there, and they don't know any grappling or fighting. They tackle the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't going to stop him. Down he'll go like a bolster, then it's the best wrestler, right?
Right.
So, but now the boxers and the karate guys are learning grappling, and a few of the grapplers have been knocked out by a left hook, and so they're learning boxing. So the tough guys do a little bit of everything.
Your fight with Savage,
uh-huh.
Right? I mean, that was pretty much like the first mixed martial arts bout.
It was the first televised of the modern age. The others weren't televised.
I know, like, the guys
I know,
Tom Jenkins fought Tom Sharkey, and, you know, guys like that. James Corbett wrestled with Farmer Burns, I think. And
yeah, and a lot of those were works.
Okay.
You know, and I know Dempsey wrestled a few guys, and, you know, some of the pros had put him over, then he'd go against a guy, and he'd hook him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A good one, you know, made a better that could wrestle. And they did that on different tours.
Now, do you think that your early boxing training gave you an advantage?
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I put it in a little bit with the wrestling. You know, like guys, the old wrestlers, they, okay, let's lock horns. Well, sometimes you bob and weave from boxing, and all of a sudden you're behind the guy.
Right.
Everything complements each other, you know. But a guy named Bruce Lee used to train with me, and he said, Gene, wrestling will never be good or big, because they want to see you know, because he was you know, Hong Kong, he was a big star and everything like that. And I wish he would have lived another 25 years so he could see the biggest commercial thing on television is pro wrestling, you know? And, you know, of course, people, they change, you know? You got to change with them if you're going to be in the financial venue. Lou Thesz, anybody that didn't work close, he beat the shit out of.
Mm-hmm.
I stood there and a bunch of times saw him wrestle guys and hook on them and ride them. Just, you know, he says, you don't, I don't take a fall for you, then you show off to the crowd flexing. He says, you're going to die. You know, and I mean, he backed up everything. A lot of people didn't like him because he was so much for pro wrestling and a finishing holds that a lot of people just didn't care.
Yeah.
But he told me that Carl was the best, you know.
Carl Gotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I saw Lou, and I was in, what is it, Omaha, Nebraska, and I saw him work with a bunch of amateur wrestling champions. You know, national champions, and just play with them. And
you think somebody of Carl's or Lou's ability would fare well in today's mixed martial arts?
Well, there's a guy that I would, in my prime, be afraid to go against. Carl and Lou would have both most likely stretched me.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was in good shape, and I worked out every day. We were in, I guess it was Omaha, Nebraska, and there was a couple of guys that supposedly were national champions, state champions, Oklahoma. And I went and worked out with this one heavyweight guy that was supposed to be the NCAA champion, whatever. And I went about 9 minutes, and he's strong as can be, and he weighed a hell of a lot more than me, and I finally got him down and hooked him. And then Lou was working out with these guys, and he's beating him really, like playing with him. He just came very casual. And then he says, okay, to this big guy, and I says, he's going to have one hell of a rough time. How is he going to get him? You know, and I mean, this guy's big, and he's strong. He had me in the air a bunch of times. you know, not finishing, but he's got me in, up there.
Yeah.
And he picked Lou up, threw him down, and next thing I knew, this is all in about a minute, Lou had him in an ankle lock, and the guy is screaming for help. You know, I said, oh, fuck. You know, and he got up slowly and was limping off, and he says, that's great, but it's illegal, you know. What are you going to say? Of course it's illegal. But, you know, you don't play a guy at his own game.
Right, right.
If I'm going against a champion wrestler, he better be able to block overhand right. If he's a, you know, a champion boxer, you tackle him, go behind, and grab a leg, an ankle. It's a long way from the heart. You know, it's just horses for courses.
And now, and then also, you were the ref for the Muhammad Ali and Inoki fight.
Yeah.
And wasn't Carl Gotch in Inoki's corner?
Yes.
What was the deal? What was going on in that fight? I mean,
well,
it obviously didn't unfold like a normal mixed martial arts fight. From my understanding, the backstory was.
I'll tell you what it was. First of all, they were talking about having it at work, you know? And that's what Freddie Blassie was also there, you know? And they didn't talk to me at all. And I said, shit, it's a lock for Inoki. And even a mediocre wrestler is going to be the guy that has gloves on you can't grab.
Yeah.
You know, I worked out with Inoki when he was little Tokyo. And wasn't a great wrestler. He was a good wrestler.
I mean, why was he always kicking at his legs?
Well, what Inoki did, he trained with these wrestlers, and he got a hold of some karate guy, Japanese guys. He says, if you kick him in the thigh, he'll go down. And so the guy kicked Inoki while they were talking, and it hurt. He says, okay, you lay on your back and you kick him, and then he can't hit you while you're down. And, I mean, it's about as worse coaching as you could ever get. And, you know, Carl says, take him, tackle him, take him down and break his leg or his arm or his neck. And he just did it his own way. And so I was told that afterwards that Freddie said they were talking about letting Muhammad Ali or Cassius Clay beat up Inoki and then do a blizz job, you know, a blizz aid job. And I guess...
Cut himself, you mean?
Yeah. You know, do it in the corner or something like that. I don't know. And, but they didn't want to tell me because they wanted me to be, you know, like kayfabe or something like that.
Yeah.
And it turns out, I guess, and I wasn't privy to this. I didn't hear it. I didn't talk to Clay about it. Didn't talk to Inoki about it. But it was mentioned, and I guess Clay wouldn't go for it. Make it look like he's beating the guy, then he got a cut, you know? And so he says, I can beat any wrestler anyway. And he's looking at, I went to his room, Clay, and he's looking at the pro wrestlers. I mean, working and how he's going to beat them. And I said, oh, fuck, these guys aren't wrestlers, you know? And anyway, it was a boring fight. And then in the 15th round, Ali hit Inoki a couple times. And, you know, Inoki says, I wish I knew. He says, he didn't hurt me, you know. But, I mean, they both weigh like 2 1/4. You know, that's a hell of a lot of weight. And, you know, you shouldn't get knocked down the first punch. But you don't take a punch like that. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, the guy can't grab you once he's down with gloves on. The gloves nowadays, you know, you put your fingers through, you got a certain amount of grip, you know? And not the greatest grip in the world, but you can't grab with 8-ounce gloves. And we put in a scorecard, and my score came out even. I didn't even keep track of it. And the wrestling coach voted for the boxer, and the boxing coach voted for the wrestler. So it was a draw. And Arlie went to the hospital for a few days with those blood clots on the left knee.
Oh, geez.
Above the left knee.
So he did do some significant damage, and
yeah. But that's, you know, I wanted to bitch slap him, you know. I thought about the third round, I'd like to wrestle one guy and then the other guy and take home the money. And Ollie got $6 million, Noki got $2 million,
jeez.
Poor Gene got $5,000. Oh. It was big money then.
Wow. You wrestled under a mask as the hangman for a while.
Sometimes I wrestled under the mask, and I had an outfit they made from Mexico in Texas, and a mask. And I said, Jesus, looks like you can see part of the face. I says, I can see right through this. So this guy from Mexico puts an eye in the middle, and you'd wrestle in some of the small towns, and then you'd come back and wrestle as another character with a different try. And I was Henry the One-Eyed Batman, and then I'd come back and Gene LeBeau would wrestle.
Now,
with different styles.
Sure, sure. And back then, I mean, it was relatively dangerous, wasn't it? Especially to be a heel, because the fans would actually come after you sometimes.
My first week in Amarillo, I got cut 5 times from fans. And Freddie Blassie, you know, of course I got on television and said one Californian can beat any 10 Texans. But what really got me over is the first match I had. I was out of the ring, and they had a black section. This is funny. They had to go way up in the top, and this little gal must have been about 5 years old, cute in a bug's ear, a little black gal, and she had her pigtails, you know, with ribbons.
Okay.
And she came up and wanted my autograph, and I picked her up and gave her a big hug and a kiss and on the cheek, and wrote an autograph, and I'm picking her up and waving her to the crowd. And they were booing, and I said, Jesus, what did I do, you know? And she went back, and it seems very, very prejudiced. Then I walk down to the dressing room, past the dressing room. It says the colored drinking fountains and the colored bathroom.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know they were separated. So when I get on television, the announcer says, hey, you wouldn't give a pickaninny, or whatever they call them, an autograph. And I grab the guy, and I don't know if he's working or shooting with me, and I grab him, and I says, look, my mammy is black, you know? And then I shove him up against the side there, and he, you know, I'm working, but he's scared thinking I'm a psycho. And, you know, the next week, place is sold out. Then I did a gimmick that I take challengers out of the audience. You know, if they could beat me, they'd get $100. And if they were, of course, they'd have to be born in Texas. So a guy had come up, Doc Sepulis had put a cardboard box in the ring, and would sit down. And I said, I saw this guy in Chicago. He's not from Texas. Of course, he'd have a cowboy hat on and a 10-gallon hat and boots to match. Of course, he's from Texas. You got to come back next week with 10 witnesses. Of course, all the 10 witnesses came back, had to pay no Annie Oakley's. And he'd come back next week. And, some big farm guy. So you take him down and have fun with him. And then put him to sleep. And then Dory Funk Sr. or one of those guys would jump in the ring to save the day, and they'd beat the shit out of me and body slam me and everything. And I'd get on television and say they were cheating and everything, but I'll take anybody from the audience. And we went for 16 weeks straight, and the houses kept on getting bigger and bigger.
Wow. So it was almost like the old carnival wrestling gimmick, huh?
Yeah. Oh, sure, that's it. Right there, the stranger into town type thing, yeah. And, the same thing, but we had a lot of shoots back then, in the 50s.
Do you think things would be different nowadays because, you know, I mean, there's so many different videos out there and everybody knows, you know, different little things about grappling here and there. Do you think it would be a lot harder to run that kind of gimmick today?
That's a hard question to answer. It depends what you mean harder. For example, the grappling and the Get Tough contests are very popular. They're getting popular in Japan. But you get a 1,000 audience to watch a grappling show where they're shooting, or to watch a couple of pro wrestlers getting married in the ring, or hitting on somebody else's wife in the ring. They're going to look at the soap opera. And so it's what sells. And I remember Lou used to get, if a guy wrestled in the ring and tried to make a clown out of Lou, Lou would hurt him. And he used to wrestle this guy, Charlie Moto, Mr. Moto. And Charlie said to me, he says, "I hate to wrestle Lou because I gotta throw salt to the four winds to purify the air. And he just beats the shit out of me, but he says, I make lots of money." I'm refereeing Carl. See, I don't know if he'll remember this. And I said, "Carl, I want to see a backdrop. I want to see this. I'm a referee, and I'm calling these things, and he's beating the living shit out of this guy." You know? And I says, "That was luck. Do it again, you know, because I want to learn, you know."
During a live match?
He did it again, you know, and,
That's hilarious.
Now, well, the guy's 6'6", and the other guy, the Japanese guy, about 270 or 80.
Wow.
And the guy was, in judo, he won a lot from the standing throws. His mat work was good, but not great. I can beat him on the mat, no trouble, but I couldn't have thrown around like Carl did, you know.
Now, you've also had quite a few famous students from, you know, Bruce Lee coming in and doing some grappling with you, and Chuck Norris, and but then you've also, I don't think a lot of people know that that Rowdy Roddy Piper is a black belt in your system, isn't that? Is that right?
Yeah, well, he's not braggadocious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was, you have to be, I think, 18, and I think he was 16 wrestling. And he used to come down to the gym and work out really hard. And, for a long time, and he got damn good. You know, he got damn good, and I'm wrestling him, I've wrestled him a bunch of times pro, and I'm going to go over and all that stuff, and then he eats, and before the match, he throws up right in my fucking face, you know, and purple stuff came out. I says, "Bullshit," and then I jumped out of the ring, and I'm wiping this shit off me, and I'm really pissed, and I says, "Well, if the referee gives me a quick count, I start to get sick to my stomach, too," and they counted me out, and he got a win, you know, and he put it in his book, and I don't know, I might have put it in my book, but, you know, I always tease him, "You crossed me, you know." I hate it. But it's true. God damn it. Roddy's a love. I really like him.
Because I don't think a lot of people know that he's actually, like a legit guy.
Yeah. And he's kind of from the old school. I saw him on a show, and they were talking about putting down pro wrestling. He showed his wrist where it was busted and it didn't heal right, and he pulled down his pants and everything. I said, oh, fuck. He says, you think wrestling's easy? Get your ass in here. I'll wrestle you. And he would, too, you know.
Yeah, I've met him once. He's a really sincere guy.
Very, very nice guy. A class act.
I wrestled
in my book that'll be out. He wrote a nice forward.
Oh, great.
And so did Chuck. And Chuck's, they don't get any better than Chuck. And, of course, Bob Calhoun wrote a letter.
Yeah.
And his letter is funny. He's got a great sense of humor.
Oh, he was great. He was actually the backbone of our promotion, I felt, because the promotion was very, it was like me and one other guy had any kind of legit wrestling background, and everybody else were pretty much just comedians that knew how to take a bump, really. I mean, it was all funny gimmicks. And he would get on the mic, and he could get the crowd laughing so well.
Yeah, he did my roast thing, and he was one of the guys that roast me. And it was funny, but it's an in-joke. He said, because I'm trying not to put down people. And this book that was stolen from me, they put down a couple of people, and I was just talking to him as I'm talking to you, and I don't put down people.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I try not to.
Yep.
I might say this guy's an asshole, but, you know, he's a good guy.
Right, right, right.
And even in my book, I don't put down my brother, who is the biggest thief in the world. I just put a paragraph from Freddie's book saying that Gene was a great wrestler and his brother maybe had different parents because he'd steal for this and steal for that. And so it wasn't me that says my brother's an asshole thief.
Right.
And Freddie didn't give a damn.
No, I think that's a great policy. No sense in hurting anybody, you know?
Well, there, you know, being in show business, stunts for 49 years.
Yeah.
How's that for a quick calculation?
Wow.
You learn a lot of things. You know, I've been with a lot of stars. I've seen a lot of things that I shouldn't have seen. And why bury them? I always say, my mother used to say this, probably why I say it, if you have to build yourself up by knocking somebody else up, you're a loser yourself.
So now you also, I mean, you were pretty close with Vic Christie too.
Very, very close.
He was a tough guy.
He was a very good wrestler, very underestimated wrestler. He hooked a lot of guys, and I remember years ago, in the early 50s, Lou and Baron Leone were going to have a match at Gilmore Stadium or whatever it was, and a big match. And so Lou had to work with five or six guys and beat him real quick-like. And Vic got behind him and hooked him and rode him. That's the way it, and this was like a five-minute workout. So he got him, hooked him, and Lou wants to, at the end of the match, be winning, you know, like he could win. Make it look like everybody was easy. So he got behind him for the last 2 minutes and held him. Well, if somebody that's not as good as you, and Vic was very good, gets in a hold and you can't get out of it, it's tough. So the bell rang and Vic got up, ran out of the arena, which is kind of interesting. And, oh, of course, Lou wanted to kill him. Well, Vic used to do all these things. He got my ass thrown in jail. I'm in Texas, and the son of a bitch, well, it's a long story. We're in this town, and, you know, you go from one town to another, and the whole guys, they're in their own cars. And to make a long story short, they all stayed at this Fleabag hotel.
Yeah.
And, you know, you stay for a dollar a day or something. You go down the hall to the bathroom. Doc Sepulis was the hooker then. And in this small town, I start to go. I have my two suitcases, my clothes, and we're on the road. We live in Amarillo, but we stay overnight for 3 days in San Angelo, Abilene, and Lubbock, or whatever it was. And so I go down, and there's a couple of guys in a brown cop uniform. And Vic's there on his knees.
Yeah.
I can't help it. He's a kleptomaniac. And I says, what the fuck is he talking about, a kleptomaniac? What are they having there here? You know, and, you know, I'm not even thinking of a practical joke, because that's all he did is play jokes on me. And the cops came up to me and gives me a shove, and he says, what do you got in your bag? And I says, this is my clothes and my wrestling gear. I'm a professional wrestler, and I'm leaving to go to Amarillo. I wasn't going to Amarillo. I was going to some other town on the way. And I say, why? What's the problem, officer? And he says, well, we've had trouble here. Open up the suitcase. And I says, you open it up. And he opens it up, and there's sheets and towels, you know, and a pillow. And I said, I don't know, that's my clothes. He says, what's in the other suitcase? I says, my wrestling gear. And about this time, I was wondering if Vic did something, you know. Well, he crawls over to the guy, grabs him around the leg, and he's crying, hysterical. He's a kleptomaniac. He doesn't know what he's doing. And I says, hey, Vic, I'm on the main event, I hear, on the next town. Don't screw me up. He opens up this bag, and there were, you know, my wrestling gear. I don't know where the wrestling gear was. There was a toilet paper, the Gideon Bible, you know, and some feathers from somewhere, probably a pillow or something. And he says, you're going to jail. I says, where the hell's my, I'm not going to jail, I'm going to wrestle. Where's my gear? And I, you know, and there's Christy crying on the ground. Don't take him away. His mother loves him. We love him, you know, and all this shit. And off I go, you know. So I'm telling him, this guy, you know, in jail, and he says, the cop says, oh, God, he said, well, first of all, my wallet was in the suitcase, and I said to the cop, I says, look, my wallet's in the suitcase. I don't know how much gas I have in the car. Can you give me $10? He says, get the fuck out of here. If I see you in this town again, you're going to jail forever, you know? So I went and got it. He took me to my car, and I says, if I run out of gas, I'm dead, you know? And I go into the next town, and I see on the little marquee there, Judo Gene Wrestling the Baron. Well, that's the name he worked under that time, the Baron. And I says, this son of a bitch, I'm going to fuck him up really good. I walk in the dressing room, and there is my clothes, my wallet, and some wrestling things. And a couple of my clothes were gone. A shirt, you know, a t-shirt. And which, oh, about a month later, I see Vic wearing it. You know, and, oh, this was given to me by one of the wrestlers. Anyway, so whoever the promoter is, I said, I'm not talking to that son of a bitch. I'm going to kill his ass, you know. And he gets in the ring, you know, and this is the main event, and there isn't too many guys, you know, it's maybe 300 people in the arena, if there was that many. And he goes for a headlock. I go behind him, I pick his ass up as high as I could, backwards, and drop him on the back of his head, and I top him. And, you know, I figure, well, we're going to have fun for a while, but it knocked him out. And I, you know, did a crouching Nelson and cranked him up pretty good. And, you know, his eyes rolled back. And so then I got up and I went to the wrestling room and I took off. So halfway back, we stopped at this eating place. I think I put this in the book, but it's a funny story anyway. And it was really great. They used to make home cooking, mom's home cooking. And they had big, fluffy biscuits. And they used to make hamburger steaks, big, round hamburger steaks with baked potatoes and garden fresh vegetables. I mean, after wrestling, you stop in this town, and it was not expensive. And they had the best soups that you ever taste with hunks of meat in them and everything. So I go in, and I'm sitting on a stool, and two of the guys that were in the perimeters are there. And they nod, but, you know, it's on television. The heels and the baby faces don't... you know, they don't talk to each other, you know?
Right.
And so they're looking, and it's raining hard. And the door swings open, and here comes a guy in all full of mud in a suit. And it's Vic. He comes and sits at a stool right next to me, mud all over his body. You know, and I said, oh, God, I screwed him up. I just, because I couldn't take a swerve. I'm a prick. I'm an asshole. I'll never do it again. What can I do to do the right thing? And so I'm looking at him, and he takes his time, and so the gal comes up and says, what would you want to eat? Now, you got to see all the around the top. Is these different signs, Jesus loves you and all those very religious things. You know?
Okay, okay.
So anyway, he's there and he says, you know, I have kind of, you know, help him out. He wants some soup, lady. You know, and he finally says, soup. And so... you know, I'm there, and I said, oh, my goodness, I don't know what to do. And these other two guys, wrestlers, are looking at me. You know, Art Nelson was one of them. I forget who the other guy was. And, like, they think it's a shoot, you know? So I do, too. Of course, it was, yes. So he tries to pick up this big spoon. And to eat the soup. He can't pick it up. And he's trying, and he starts to have hysterics. He can't pick up the spoon. And so he begins to try to pick up the bowl, and he spills part of it, you know. And she says, wait a minute. And I says, well, I think he's working, or I didn't want to take a chance. I says, excuse me, lady, I'll feed him. And she pinched me on the forearm, and it hurt. And he says, there, but for the grace of God, go you. Okay?
Yeah.
So she feeds him the bowl, and it's going down his face. And, I mean, it's all over the place. And I really, you know, I felt like I did something, and God forgive me, you know, and whatever. And then... You got to see it in person, and then he says, how much? You know, and so she says 25 cents, you know, and you know, it's a big bowl of soup. I mean, it's a dinner in itself, and so. Anyway, he's reaching in his pocket, and I'm reaching in my pocket because I'm going to pay for it. And I start to get close, and she doesn't look at me. She looks at him in the eye and shoves my arm away. Get her out of here, you know, like, thing. And he finally goes into this thing where you keep your watches in a double-breasted suit, and he pulls out a quarter, a muddy old, dirty old, wet quarter, and he's looking at it real close to make sure it's a quarter, not a nickel. And then she's like reaching her hand out, shaking, to grab it. He flips it in the air and grabs it and slams it on the table there, where we all sat, and says, "That's the best damn service I've ever had." And I fell over off the chair because I had no back on it. I hit my head, hurt myself. The wrestler thought I was just working. I just, oh my God, he's alive, you know. He fucked me, and I just fell off. You know, I can't explain it. I'm in my 20s, and what did I know? Early 20s. And off he goes, and out the door.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's funny. It ain't funny when you're there. And that went on all my life. And when he was retired and everything, I moved to the condo where I'm at when I first got it. And he's out in the park across the street. This is before they built the small fence. And he's in a jock strap sunbathing.
Oh, my God.
Time. And I look out and I say, "That's Vic." And I say to my wife, "Look at that degenerate there, freaking in a bikini bathing suit. He's a pervert right in the middle of the parking lot." And it's right across the street. You can see it. I says, "I'm going over there and talk to him, you know?" And she says, "Don't you dare." So I go over there, and I drive over there in my car because I have to take off. She comes ready. She wasn't going to come with me, but she wanted to make sure I didn't say anything, you know?
Yeah.
So I get out of the car, and I says, "Get the hell out of this park, you sick degenerate." And the jockstrap, it's like a bathing suit that you wear underneath your wrestling type sometimes. And I says, "Get out of here." And he says, "Well, I'm getting raised, you know." And she says, "Gene, get back in the car and we get out of here." Anyway, so she screams at me for a couple of days, opens the door, and there's Vic sitting in a chair. Right at the door, he rings the door and sits there. And he says, "You got a nickel for dinner or a quarter for dinner?" And I says, "It's that safe. Degenerate, don't talk like that, you know." So, things went like that. I mean, he always did things like that. And when we go out to eat, you know, he'd say, "Well, I'm going to buy," and all that. Of course, I'd end up with a check some flopping away. And before he got sick, he wanted to go, he did extra work. He wanted to go to the actor's home, you know, because they gave real good care of you, and they weren't charging at that time. And he tried for 6 months, and he knew a lot of big movie stars, and they couldn't get him into the Screen Actors Guild home. And I used to hire him because I was running stunts. I hired him on the California split, and he was an extra, and I was a stunt guy, and they wanted somebody to throw a punch at an actor, which was me. And I says, "Oh, he'll throw a nice working punch." And he didn't. And I thought, well, everything's okay. He didn't try to cause trouble. He's over with the director and telling him I'm a screaming fag, that I shouldn't be on the set.
What?
He's going to run the stunts from now on in all his movies. And then the first assistant comes up to me, and he says, "Well, the director doesn't like fags, and, you know, so what's that have to do with me?" And so that went on. And
oh, my gosh.
I mean, that went for years. But when he got sick, he a couple of times, he lived only a mile from here, and he fell out of bed, and he called me up, and I had to come over and pick him up in bed to I called up a doctor friend of mine. I says, he worked at the actor's home. I says, do you know anybody that has enough clout to get a guy in? And he says, geez, it's impossible, but I've got a guy there that will probably die within a day or two, and I'll see what I can do. And the guy died next day, and he shoved Vic in there.
Wow.
And there was a lot of stuff. So he was there for a few months, and, you know, I used to visit him every other day. And the day before he died, I went there, and he was in a, you know, a depression because his legs turned purple, his lack of circulation, he had cancer and every other damn thing.
Mm.
And he says, I'm going to die. And I said, no, you're not going to die because I just talked to the doctor and he's moving into one of these outside bungalows in a couple days. And boy, it'll be really nice there. And he was really happy. He said, I want you to get a picture of you and your wife and we're going to pin it on the wall. And, you know, I'm trying to make him happy and everything
yeah.
like that because he was a big part of my life.
Yeah.
I went back the next day and they said he just passed away. And that was a tearjerker, you
yeah.
know. And,
So you guys were really close.
Oh, yeah. And, he wanted to be next to Ted, and he had a plot of ground, and I guess his nephews or whatever got the money and had him cremated and sold the plot. I don't know. They might be good guys. I never talked to them about it, but a couple of the wrestlers were teed off. And, I mean, the guy changed my life. You know, everybody you meet changes your life, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I could go down some of the swears I put in the book. And, I mean, he did more things to me. And he got me into wrestling. My stepdad, I used to work out. My name was LaBelle. And my mother married my stepdad in Eaton, so everybody knew Cal Eaton, and they didn't know Arlene Eaton was my mother because I was just a wrestler. I used to work out, you know, a couple of days a week at the Legion where they're trying to teach guys how to work. And I was, you know, they did a little bit of shooting and a little bit of working and everything, so I was having fun. And I said I wanted to be a wrestler, but my stepdad doesn't want me to be, and he didn't know that who my stepdad was. So long and short of it, Jules Strombo comes in, and I'm wrestling some guys that are pretty good wrestlers. I mean, good amateur wrestlers, and I'm playing with them. And he says, great, this guy, Jules and Cal Eaton, they're the promoters, and when they're coming down to the ring right now, and you want to be a pro wrestler, that's the guy. I went through the ropes. He said, my stepdad said he'd kill me if I was ever training with the pro wrestlers at Main Street Gym. Of course, I lived at Main Street Gym and the pro wrestlers, and so I got out. And then my dad and I before had a bet. He says, if you want to be a pro wrestler, I got a guy named Louie Miller that's not as big as you, and he'll stretch you 5 times in 5 minutes. And I says, well, bet me, you know. He really was a frustrated bully, so we bet $100. And I says, okay. And he says, I'm going to take it from you, too. And he always treated me like garbage. And so a week later, I said, did you call this Louie Miller up to set up our grappling, our wrestling match? And he says, don't bother me, because I knew what happened. He went to talk to Louie, because Louie was a good wrestler. But I've been working out with Louie for 3 or 4 years,
right.
You know. And so he's going to, so Cal says, okay, you want to be a wrestler, we're going to start you. You know, and I says, that's great, but I can't wrestle right now because I'm training for the 55 Nationals. And he says, that's 2 months and I'm in the top shape of my life. And a lot of people said I won the last one on luck, and I'm going to prove that it wasn't luck, you know. And so a week before I come down with the worst tonsillitis in the world, he says, I told you, you don't enter this tournament, you know. And I says, I'm going to enter no matter what. Well, long and the short of is, where was the tournament? Held in Los Angeles. What did the Amateur Athletic Union rent? The Olympic Auditorium.
Oh, my gosh.
From my mother. Cal didn't know anything about it. So I'm there. I come in with 104 temperature.
Oh, my God.
It's a two-day tournament. And he's really giving me a vote of confidence. You dumb son of a bitch. You know? And, you know, I went made it to the second day, and I was pretty lucky, you know. But I was running out of gas, and one of the guys from the U.S. Air Force, one of the training guys, and I couldn't eat, gave me an orange, big orange. And it gave me such a lift, a sugar rush, that the next few matches, I had 18 matches in 2 days. And that's a lot. Now, the way the rules are, you get 4 or 5 matches in amateur judo and you've won the nationals. So, a one-day tournament. But they had a point system that you really had to be good. Or damn lucky, as I was. And so it goes on and on. And then I says, well, and then he wanted me to turn pro. And I says, I can't. Because if you win, you know, you go to the internationals in Japan. And, of course, I had this tonsil trouble and I couldn't eat. And I get down to 163 pounds. I look like a polio victim with a six-pack. And that went on and on. I never did get along with Cal.
But so then, how did Vic play into that in terms of you getting started?
Vic told him, hey, We get all these good shooters in there, and Gene hooks them all, and easy. And he says, you got to get this guy. And Vic didn't know that I was related to Cal. In fact, Vic was showing a buddy slam, and I used to take good bumps. And he showed him how he could body slam me, and I used to do a gimmick where they'd slam me and my feet had hit the ropes and I'd do a flip completely over and land on my back and the guy would top me. Vic, but it's just comedy thing. And I guess they saw that earlier. Then we went into some shooting and so he always said, Cal said, if I wrestled every other pro would beat me up. You know? He never saw me wrestle. So he didn't know how good I was. I used to work out with Joe Pazendek, who was a good shooter, and, you know, a lot of these guys were all Russians and Japanese guys, and a lot of good guys. You know, I'd take them and get a few pointers and, you know, roll with them and everything. That's my life.
That's great.
Sick as it is.
Well, you know, the other night I was watching cable, and I couldn't believe it, but there you were on Reno 911, acting all crazy and driving off on a scooter.
Yeah, funny bit. I did another Reno. They said they wanted me back, okay?
Yeah.
Because they laughed. Okay? They wanted an old man in a hospital on a walker who's naked.
Okay.
And walking there. And I says, look, I'm not going to do any naked shots. It isn't even something, they can't pay me enough. I'm sick, but I'm not a pervert. You know? He says, don't worry, we'll, they put a shade over your, you know, so you can't tell if you have the clothes on or not. And I said, okay, I'll go for that. So the cop is supposed to, a man cop is just supposed to tackle me. Now, I got the shakes, I'm on a walker. I'm on the stakes and I'm walking down this hall. in the hospital, and the guy is supposed to tackle me, and I knock over a fistful of prescriptions and everything, and the guy says, supposed to say, you're under arrest, and handcuff me. That's according to the script, okay? So what happens is the stunt coordinator and the director says, hey, we like to have a little fun. Steve Hart is the coordinator. He says, take the guy down and roll over and have some fun with him for a while. You know, and I says, okay. And he says, just play it up. Then we'll do it right. So we go down the hall, and I'm shaking, and I'm really kind of overacting as a 80-year-old man. And he tackles me and takes me down, okay?
Yeah.
I do the knock everything aside. One of the women says, get that streaker. So the cop goes and tackles me. Okay, he goes down. He's on top of me. And I'm waiting for him to say, you're under arrest. He's looking at me, and he doesn't say a sign. I says, I love you. I want to marry you. And I hook him, and I roll him over, and I pretend like I'm dry-fucking him, you know? And he's trying to get up. He says, I'll choke you. I said, choke me. I love it. I love it. Choke me. You know, and I keep on going like I'm screwing him. He's trying to get up. I won't let him up. I play around and playing with his tits and everything, you know. And he said, God damn it, get off me. I says, I love it. Kiss me, kiss me. And he's having a panic thing, you know. So finally, the director says, cut. And I get up and I help him up. And I go to the director and he's in hysterics. I says, okay, now let's do it right. I went to the actor and I says, apologize. I says, they told me to do this. You know? So I'm going to the director and I says, now let's do it right. And he says, no, that's a print. I says, oh my God. And, but it's got to be the funniest thing they've ever done if they print it. Anyway, that's that.
Well, I don't want to keep you. You've been so generous with your time. This has been great. You've got some great stories.
For more information, please visit scientificwrestling.com, where the best grapplers from the past and the future meet.